I had to come up with a title that might be relevant. Okay, hi, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. This is really a beautiful event, and I'm glad to be able to join once again. So I guess the title sort of suggests the challenge. Did the Avos have a Shidduch crisis? Define Shidduch crisis, I guess. I have, by the way, I was thinking of a completely different topic of, is there really a Shidduch crisis? Okay, because I actually don't believe it's a Shidduch crisis. I think that all the things that we're talking about here, the Shidduch issue is only one piece of the larger relationship crisis that not just us, it's not just in the Jewish world, the whole world is having, but we have our own unique way of grappling with it. So I don't really actually believe that I think the Shidduch crisis is a misnomer and actually isn't helpful. But that's not today's topic. So did the Avos have a Shidduch crisis? This is actually a Chumash shiur, not a policy shiur. Okay, I really have some some interesting perspectives on what the Avos went through and the Imahos went through in terms of Shidduchim. So what would you define? What would be their problem? Just think outside the box a little bit. Just think for a moment in terms of Avot and Imahot, and what their role is for us, and what would be the crisis for them. Oh, by the way, if you're expecting me to speak the entire time, forget it. We're going to sit here for a while, okay, because I'm a teacher, not a lecturer. So anybody, what would be their challenge? You're Avraham. You're not Avinu yet. You're just Avraham. What's your challenge?
I find someone like-minded.
I need to find someone like-minded. Well, what mind am I trying to be like?
He had a trailblazing perspective.
Did he? When he got married? When it was time for him to get married? Join us. Did he have at that point already a trailblazing perspective? Like, when did he become a trailblazer? I know he had his own thoughts about things, but at what point in his life did he realize that it's time for me now to spread the word? Was he 3? Was he 23? Was he 50? And when did he get married to Sarah, for that matter? At what point in his journey did he find Sarah? Did they become this together? Did he look for someone that was like him because he needed, or was Sarah just the only one that was available to him at the time? Okay, so I'm a text person, so let's see what the text has to...
I was going to say, it's all midrashic literature that paints his...
Yeah, but midrashic literature, theoretically, somewhere should be reflected in the text. Okay? I'm not so sure with Avram whether it's going to work so well. So Tarach is 7... I'm assuming that you know more... Since there's so little in the text... I'm assuming that more or less you know the stories. Terach is 70 years old. He has Avram and Nachor and Haran. And Haran has a child by the name of Lot. And Haran dies while his father is still alive in Ur Kasdim. And Avram and Nachor take wives for themselves. Avram marries Sarai. Nachor marries Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Yiscah. So here the Torah mixes up all kinds of names together. All we're told is that Nachor marries Milcah, who's the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Yiscah. We have no idea who Yiscah is. This is where we need the Midrashim. But we do know that Nachor marries Milcah, the daughter of Haran. Wait, who's Haran? Who's Haran? We saw him already. Whose
brother?
Nachor's brother. So Nachor marries his niece. Okay? Nachor marries his niece. It does not tell us that Avram marries his niece. It tells us Avram marries Sarai. Okay? Who the Medrash comes along and tells us is Yiscah, the sister of Milcah, also his niece. So it turns out that although we happen to know through the Midrashim that Avram and Nachor both marry their nieces, the Torah chooses not to tell us that. The Torah hides that little piece of information. Why? And this is wide open. You could do whatever you want with this. You can have the best time in the world. Why would the Torah hide that piece of information?
Maybe to not equate them. Maybe not to equate the two brothers, because one was good and we hear about him for the rest of Tanakh and his legacy. And the other one, we sort of, he falls off the face of the planet and we don't.
Yes and no. Okay, first of all, I agree that on a simply kipshuto, yeah. I only need to know about Avram and Sarah because they're the rest of the story.
Right.
Okay, and his name's going to change and her name's going to change. So that's the piece that I really need. It is interesting to me, though, that it hides the relationship. All right. Well, even though we happen to know the relationship, right?
Intermarriage, inter-family marriage was very common.
Not that's absolutely true, but in this particular case, there's something
they're
even more
to
important.
Negate the fact that they're family, maybe to, you know,
separate them out,
a bit, like of value. Sarai was of value.
Right. Sarai had a value that
wasn't just
Milcah didn't have.
Right.
All right. Very possibly. Although it is interesting that. What does Sarai mean?
Princess.
What does Milcah mean?
Malka.
Also royalty. And what does Yiscah mean? All right, I mean, we don't really know exactly, right? Something about oils and we're not really sure what Yiscah means. And Rashi tries to help us out that Yiscah is Sarah, et cetera, But the point is, from a textual point of view, the Torah, it's interesting that Sarah gets her princess name here alongside Milcah. So maybe Avram recognized something about Sarah, and that was very different than Milcah. At this point, we don't really know. And the truth is, we don't know why they... I do talk about this. Why did Avram and Nahor marry Milcah and Yiscah? Straight up. Like this is not even very deep. Like what?
So
why was there?
There's not a lot of options.
Well, not only weren't there options, but what happened to who in their society? If a woman is not married,
you keep the family wealth. That's what I read about.
You learned that it was a wealth thing. Okay, it could be. All right, it could be that. It also could be that if you're not married, you're in trouble. Okay, so who's going to marry you? And your father's dead. Okay, so who? Someone has to take them in. In fact, it could very well be that Terach took them in. All right, because it's notice how it's Vayomot Haran al Pnei Terach Aviv Be'eretz Moav Tabor Kasdim, and Avram and Nahor take for themselves wives. It doesn't tell us the relationship, but it seems that they're taking their nieces in order to make sure they're protected. But Avram ends up marrying Sarai. All right, and Nahor Milcah. We're not exactly sure why. I'm going to actually leave this. I just want to make one point. Assuming that people are looking for like-minded people, we don't really know whether Sarai is alongside Avram at this stage of the game in terms of what they're looking to try to accomplish. We don't know that yet. But the one thing I would say is that they're both looking for the kind of people that fits their family, and therefore makes perfect sense to find someone in the family. So the question is really, what's the family dynamic? And that's going to be critical, because when we move to the next generation, it turns out that Avram is going to be looking for that same family dynamic. Assuming that he sends his Eved to go find someone from his family, which is a big machloket about whether he sent him just back to Ur Kasdim or whether he really sent him back to his family, which is, in my mind, pretty likely. He's looking for the family dynamic, for the people in the family who have more or less the same values that I have, even though they're going to be very different, but the fundamental values. And what was the fundamental value that that Eved Avram understood that he needed? By the way, you know I'm calling him Eved Avram. You know why, right?
Because the Torah never
calls him Eliezer. So the world calls him Eliezer, and I might at times slip and call him that, because why not? I have no reason to think that he's not Eliezer, but if I call him Eliezer, then everybody's going to forget that the Torah never called him that. Okay, so he sends his servant, his most trusted servant, to go find a wife for his Yitzchak, and he sends him back to the family, assumably because the family has similar values. The problem we're going to have is that we don't know when Avram chose to become Avraham, somewhere in this story, somewhere between now and the age of 75, but by the time he's 75, he is fully Avraham, and Hashem has sent him on his mission, back to Eretz Canaan. I said that for a reason, because he had already been in Eretz Canaan, it seems. Back to Eretz Canaan to fulfill Brit Ben Apatarim. And at that point, when Avram starts looking for a wife for Yitzchak, it's no longer, well, I'll just find someone who's sort of similar to me or someone who I'm going to protect because he's a member of the family. Now I'm looking for someone who can carry on the legacy. And that becomes the crisis. How do you find a wife for Yitzchak? Who do you go to that's going to buy into the mission, the destiny of this family? And that becomes the critical issue. So how does he find someone? How is Rivka ready for Yitzchak?
Because she's selfless. I mean, well, that's... I'm generalizing it a lot, but
she... So she's ready for Yitzchak, son of Avraham, member of this clan that seems to have a royal component to it and Avraham's chesed component to it. So we're looking for someone who has that value. But we're not talking about just a Yitzchak who's the son of Avraham who has the value of chesed. There's something else that I need now. What is Avraham teaching Yitzchak? Hashem appeared to me. He said to me, there's going to be a destiny for our family, and we're going to be strangers in a strange land for a few generations, and after that we're going to emerge as this great nation, and we're going to inherit a great... He's been teaching this to Yitzchak. And now I need to go find him a wife.
Wait,
who do I find?
Does Avraham ever say that to Yitzchak? I mean, The Torah never explicitly has within its text that Avraham says that to Yitzchak. I think that it's implied that Yitzchak sort of knows that. Unless I'm
okay. Why do you think it's only implied?
Just because we never have a direct conversation with Avraham saying to Yitzchak, we never have the Torah writing.
But how do I know that Yitzchak did get that message? I know for a fact that Yitzchak got that message. How do I know that? From the text. How do I know that Yitzchak understood what his role was? And he wasn't going to be the head of the clan, but he was the next in the link. How do I know that? Textually, where in the story of the Avos do I know that Yitzchak received the bracha from Avraham? Maybe. It's actually not direct. You're right. It's not directly in the text. So how do I know it?
Later on
when he gives the bracha on. He passes it along. So he must have received it in order to give it. He knows the destiny. He knows what the family is supposed to be. So who in the world is Yitzchak going to find to marry? Huge problem. Let me just take a step back. How is Rivka ready to marry a Yitzchak? And this is Yitzchak probably, I mean, at least from the, assuming that we're not going to change the chronology, that this is a Yitzchak who is post-Akedah, right? Almost, I mean, there's no reason for me to assume that it's not post-Akedah, okay? So, because the order of the story is that, I mean, everything points to that, okay? I can't actually point to a text that says how old everybody was, but it's pretty clear that this is post-Akedah. So who in the world is ready for a Yitzchak post-Akedah? In fact, according to some Mefarshim, she wasn't ready for him. What happens when she first sees him? She falls off her camel. Why does she fall off her camel?
He was
Kimala. She was in awe of what she saw. But still in awe, how does an Eved Avram find a person for a Yitzchak? How do you find such a person? So I have a theory. I've seen it once. In one book, it was written up. I have some additional thoughts to the theory that I would like to present to you. But I would like to suggest, and this, by the way, might be an interesting solution to one of the issues in Shiduchim. I'd like to suggest that this is not by accident. That Rivka wasn't ready by accident. That actually Avraham planned it. I don't know if he planned it to be Rivka, but he planned it. There was going to be someone who was going to be ready for a Yitzchak. Couldn't guarantee it, but he certainly put the pieces into motion. So let's take a look. There's an anomaly in the story. When Eved Avram comes back with Rivka, there is a piece of information that we are told that I know all of us just simply skip over because we buy into the Midrashim, and when you buy the Midrashim, then you immediately assume, oh, well, this is not a big deal. Of course, that piece of information had to be in there, but If you don't buy the Midrashim, which we're not obligated to do because there are other contrary Midrashim, then you end up with a detail in the story that absolutely makes no sense whatsoever. All the way at the end of the story, okay, Eved Avram has presented his case to Lavan and Bisuel, okay, and then somehow or another Bisuel disappears from the story. Okay, we're not going to figure out what happened to him. And Lavan and his mother, excuse me, and her mother, agree that she's going to marry him, and they try to get her to stay a little bit longer, okay? And Rivka, they ask Rivka, and Rivka agrees, okay? And they send Rivka, their sister, Ve'et Meinikta, her nursemaid. Now, if she's three, I get it. She needs her nanny if she's three. Although if she's three, then the rest of the story doesn't make any sense. Okay? I'm not saying it can't be that she's three. Okay? Precocious three. Anything can be. Okay? But there are other medrashim that indicate that she was not three, she was 14 and a half. In which case, why does she need her meineket? And who is this meineket?
Devorah.
How do I know that? Because at the end of Vayishlach, on the way back, Yaakov, on the way back to his father's house, okay, he builds a mizbech in Beit El, and Devorah, meineket Rivka, dies in Beit El. Tachat ha'alon, we're giving a lot of detail. She dies underneath the alon tree, and the place is called the alon of crying, double crying. Okay, so it's in that place that they say that's where Rivka died too, and that's why they were crying twice. Okay, all right, whether it was exactly why they're crying twice, but let's assume that it's once for Devorah and once for Rivka. So we know that Meineket Rivka has a name. Her name is Devorah. She appears in two places, and they stop and bury her under the Alon, and the Torah takes out time to tell us that Devorah died, and that they eulogized her, and they buried her under the Alon, which means that this Meineket is an important person. Why? Why is this Meineket important? So this is fun. Targum Yonasan, on the word Meineket, says, Va'alviyu yat Rivka achat hom v'yat padgugota. Padgugota. Anybody? Padgugota. It's an English word. Actually, it's a Latin word, probably.
Pedagogue.
Her Meineket's her pedagogue. It's her...
Our teacher.
What's she teaching her?
Maybe coaching her through this marriage.
Oh, wow. Spoken like a true 21st century, you know, like we're going to coach people through the marriage.
Scribe on the side.
I have a complete, I have scribe on the side. Could be. So I think it's very possible that this role that Devorah, her Meineket, is playing is as follows. It'll answer our three-year-old problem. It works out perfectly that Rivka is approximately 15. Everything lines up beautifully, and we end up figuring out how Rivka was in fact ready for Yitzchak. I'm not saying that Avram did this. I'm not still not sure who Devorah is, where she actually comes from, but I can say one thing. I believe that Devorah is the one who taught Rivka who she can become in order to get her ready for a Yitzchak. So that when Avram sends his Eved to that area, he, I believe, knows that there's a Devorah out there, and there's going to be a Devorah who's going to... someone out there is going to be ready for this Yitzchak. It's up to my Eved to figure out who that is. He had planted the seeds years before. I have a theory about that. That I have no source for it whatsoever. This here, I have my source. She's her pedagogue. Okay, it's Targum Yonasan. That's easy. Okay, and I'm gonna take it one step further. The parish of the word Meineket, according to Chazal, is pedagogue, and the other word for it is Aleph Mem Vav Nun. No. Like, Kasher Yisah Ha'omein Et Hayonek. This past week's Torah reading. All right, Moshe turns to Hashem and says, what, Ha'anochi Hariti? Did I conceive of this people? All right, you won't expect me to carry them? Kasher Yisah Ha'omein Et Hayonek says the Targum, the parish on the Targum, that the Omein is the pedagogue. And now you understand Moshe's complaint from this past week. You're asking me to get them ready for their next stage. I can't do it. Every time I try to teach them about trusting in you, they keep rejecting me. I can't get them ready for the next stage. That's the job of the teacher. The job of the teacher is to get them ready to go on and do it on their own. That was Devorah's job. Devorah's job with Rivka was to get her to go on and be prepared for a Yitzchak. Who is Devorah? I have a theory.
Did Avram plant Devorah?
Yeah. Either planted her or go all the way back. Avram does tremendous work, right? It's his destiny. He's going to teach the world about monotheism. And we know that when he left Ur Kasdim, when he leaves Haran with the Nefesh Asher Asu B'Haran. Who are the Nefesh Asher Asu B'Haran? All those people that he taught. What happened to them? We never hear about them ever again. All right, where'd they go? What'd they become? So probably a lot of them fell off the derech. Okay, I wonder if Devorah isn't one of those Nefesh Asher Asu B'Haran who didn't go along, but still believed, and then taught about this iconic figure called Avraham, who had this crazy idea called monotheism, and she found a young teenager who was drawn by this conversation, and she started talking to her, and at the beautiful age of 12, Rivka says, "You know what? I'm going to commit myself to this life." And Devorah continues to teach her for the next 3 years, so that by the time Eved Avram shows up, Rivka is ready. And how old is Rivka at this moment? Well, which calendar are you going to use? Are you going to use her biological age? She's around 15. But what about her religious age? She's 3. And now the Midrashim line up perfectly. She's 3. As a Jew, she's 3. She's 15 chronologically. Now the stories fit beautifully, and I don't have to throw out the Medrash that says she's 3, except, of course, that Medrash was coming from the fact that Yitzchak couldn't, assuming that the Avos kept the mitzvahs, how could Yitzchak be married to someone for so many years? Supposedly he's supposed to divorce her, etc., etc. So it doesn't line up with that interpretation, but it can work. Let's go now one step further. Go one more generation. We have a problem. The text has a problem, and all the Mefarshim pointed out. So Devorah comes with Rivka back to Eretz Canaan with Yitzchak. So then what's she doing with Yaakov on his way back from Lavan's house? She went with Yitzchak, with Rivka back there. So what's she doing all the way back in Haran? So what does that mean? She went back. Why'd she go back? So the Ramban has a theory. Okay, a few theories about the possibility. But one of them, he points out that it's very possible that Devorah raised the Shvatim. But before you get to Devorah raising the Shvatim, who else did she raise? Rachel and Leah. Because you have to get them ready for the Yaakov and the Esav, which, by the way, answers another question that I have. Remember the famous medrash about Leah's eyes are soft and Rachel's, right? So what does Rashi say? Why is Veinei Leah Rakot? Why are her eyes Rakot? Because she was crying. Because she thought she was going to have to marry Esav. Who told her that? Who said? Who in the world ever said? So it could be like Lavan said, Lo chen yaseh b'mkomenu, la tetatzi radafnei abechira. So it was a known thing. Of course, the cousins are going to marry each other. He had twins. I have twins. I'm assuming they're Rachel and Leah are twins. So the older of the two twins is going to marry the older of the two twins. And it could be that they were sending messages back and forth. But it also could be that Leah understood that there's two of us, we're supposed to start a nation, and then all of a sudden she begins hearing these crazy stories about the guy that she's supposed to marry, and it's not a good shidduch. But who told her about all that, if not someone who knew the whole destiny? And which, of course, why would she be crying? Because she's not going to be part of the destiny. And then when her father comes along and makes this switcheroo, why didn't she say no? Yeah, I want this destiny. And she just had to get her sister's permission. And one of the most benevolent acts ever recorded, her sister let her do it. Okay, so we have actually generations of people that are being raised by Devorah. Not only Rivka. So Avram raises her, brings her into the fold. She raises Rivka. She goes back and raises, not sure, but it would seem that she goes back. The Ramban does not say this. I'm saying this. I know, I'm not arguing with the Ramban. It's clear that she went back. I'm just saying one possibility is that she didn't go back to, according to the Ramban, she went back to call Yaakov home, or maybe she went back to help raise the kids. But if she went back to help raise the kids, then that supports my theory, that she went back to raise Rachel and Leah too, because we have to have somebody ready for Yaakov and Esau. And then she raises the Shvatim. No wonder the Torah tells us, V'thamas Devorah, Menekes Rivka. So now she's a really important person. All right? In fact, the question now is the other way around.
Why did they downplay
her? Yeah, why am I downplaying her so much? Okay? Why? So I'm going to suggest that the reason that the text downplays her is the same reason the text downplays Eved Avram. Because at the end of the day, she's not part of the family of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. She's the outsider who helps out to make sure that everybody's ready. But everybody owes her, all right? And now let me show you one more thing. One more, I think, beautiful thing. I have not seen this in any of the Mefarshim, but I think it's just simply in the text. Where is she buried?
Under the tree.
Very good. Not under the sea. Under the tree, okay? But that's a funny way to say it. Under
a tree.
A tree. And it turns out that it's a tree that now becomes famous because there was a big hesped there. But what's tachat ha'alon, the tree? Where is this? Where is this happening? In Beitel, right? Right? Vayavo Yaakov Luza, Asher Eretz Kanan, he Beitel, hu v'cholam asher imo, vayivin sham mizbeach, vayikra l'makom el Beitel, ki sham niglu elav ha'elohim, b'varcho b'pnei achiv, v'tomo t'vora, meneket rivka, v'tikaver mitachat l'Beitel, tachat ha'alon. What's ha'alon? What did Avram do everywhere that he went? Besides a mizbeach. He planted a tree. I don't think he necessarily planted a tree. He went somewhere. He parked at a tree. Why?
It's a marker.
What?
It's a marker.
Besides being a marker, I want people to stay here. I want people to visit. I'm going to find a place where there's some water nearby so that people will come by and hang out with me, and that's going to be my eshel, my achilash d'yalina. I'm going to invite people in. This is his kirov center. She's buried tachat ha'alon because she's home. She's come back to where Avraham, to the place where Avraham first started at least this mission in Eretz Canaan. So Yaakov, understanding that, brings her back to the Alon, and of course, and buries her there because that's where her, pardon me, where her roots are. Okay, at Tachat Ha'alon. Okay, and of course, then the place becomes Alon Bachut. Of course, we're crying. Now, completely different shear, which we have to complete. Why is the death of Rivka hidden? That's a completely different issue. But my time is up, according to actually both clocks. Any question?